up to Daf Yudalid Amid Beis, is that correct? Just let's just make sure we're on the same page.
That always helps.
And maybe we should start the Gemara itself on Daf Yudalid Amid Aleph, or will you do that Gemara? Have we?
I think it'd be good from the Gemara. I mean, we started it for sure.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take a look at the Gemara here. And it says
14.
Right. So the last two lines of the Gemara, Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Abba Chanin Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer Kidei Liyaga.
14A4.
Right then. So what's Kidei Liyaga? So we're trying to make her very tired.
Alright, right, come on, sit here. We had a coffee. Have a coffee.
So if you look at the ratio of our Mishnah, just to jolt your memory, it says that you know, he brings the mincha in a certain kind of a basket, and then he puts it on her hands, and she has to stretch out her hands, and this is very exhausting for her. So what's the point of exhausting her? And the Gemara answers, Kidei, the Braisa says, Kidei shetachzor bo. Now basically, we want to evince a confession from her, that she should admit that she's guilty. Until now she's been insisting that she's innocent, and we want to break down her resistance. I think we've discussed in the past that so much of sota is about the psychology of the sota and how to get her to break down, and finally like the different kinds of actions that we do, sort of like publicly humiliate her almost, and hopefully she'll say, I don't want to go through this.
It gives you a last opportunity to
back down, right? And there are two reasons why we're very much interested in the agenda is to get her to back down. One is because we're not necessarily hoping that she'll die, and secondly, we don't want to erase the name of God. So Rabbi Eliezer here in this braisa wants to take a kind of moral lesson from this, and he says the following: Im kacha Chasa Torah Ovre Ritzono. Now, as I said, there are two reasons that motivate us to want to get her to admit and confess her guilt. The most important for our purposes is today that we want to make sure that she doesn't die. That's called Chasa. Chasa means to have compassion. Compassion. Like we say, Chus V'rachim Olenu. You familiar with that? Like in Shema Kolenu, Chus means miloshon rachmanis or compassion. This is a very famous principle in Halacha called HaTorah Chasa al Mamonim Shal Yisrael. In many places, the Torah will use something that's less expensive in a service and a ritual because the Torah has compassion over the Mamon of Yisrael. You know, we think of Jewish people being wealthy, but that's not always so. I mean, plenty of periods in Jewish history we were very poor. And I think you gentlemen learned Masechta Titus, am I right?
Yeah.
So you may remember that the reason why the Gemara tells us in Masechta Titus they added Atachon Antanu as a special Abdullah in Chonin Adas, even though we have Abdullah Akos, is because HaTorah Chosa, the Torah had compassion on Mamonim Shal Yisrael. Could you imagine a cup of wine at that period of time was so expensive that they wanted you to have the opportunity of reciting Abdullah without a cup of wine? And they inserted Havdol into Tefillah. But there are many, many examples of this. In Beis HaMikdash, there are tons of examples where the Torah says that you don't have to spend all that money. I don't know if you know this, the menorah itself, which was made of gold in the first Beis HaMikdash, was made of wood in the second Beis HaMikdash. Because again, during the second Mikdash, people were very poor. And a Torah Chasa. But anyway, getting back to the word Chasa, Im Kacha. Now here's Rabbi Eliezer's Kal Vachomer. He says, Im Kacha, Chasa Torah Ovre Ritzon. Here's a woman who violated Stira. She's no great Tzadekis, as you would say. You know, she's not Shema Sara. here. And yet the Torah was very mekil, and the Torah says, let's see if we can spare her and perhaps save her from having to drink from the Mei Merorin, which will ultimately lead to her death. Now, why is the Torah so compassionate for someone who really doesn't deserve compassion? She did violate this prohibition of stira, and you know, she may really be guilty and deserve to die, but no, the Torah is going out of its way to see if we can finally orchestrate it that she will not have to drink from the Mei Merorin. Is Kal Vachomer, how much more so, Al Osei Ritzono, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is certainly going to be compassionate for those who fulfill His will. Now, the truth is that when you talk about the lives of the Rishoyim and the lives of the Tzaddikim, it's not always obvious that God has compassion over the Tzaddikim. Sometimes it looks to us to be just the opposite, that God is very harsh with the Tzaddikim. And that's a Gemara Masechta Moikaton. The Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu medagdekim et tzaddikim kichut asara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very, very demanding and exacting when it comes to a tzaddik. And there are many, many agaditas, especially for those who are learning Daf Yomi and Masechta Brachos that we just finished, that indicate that when God has compassion, it's not necessarily in this world. Sometimes it's because of the next world. We have a very limited myopic view. Our perspective is limited to this world. And of course, in this world, we see tzaddik v'ralo. But there's an ultimate world. And sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world will give reward to the Rishoyim so that whatever little merits they have, they'll get paid up, and then they'll be completely lost in the next world. Whereas in tzaddikim, it goes just the opposite way. So again, as I say, this concept of chasa rachmana on osei ritzono, God has compassion on those who fulfill His will, that has to be taken into a much broader context to see the depth of what that rule is and when it applies. Now, in terms of this Kal Vachomer li osei ritzono, we find this Kal Vachomer in one form or another quite frequent, quite often, not just with regard to sota, but even out of the bounds of sota. So for example, we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with regard to sin, which is called iniquity, the God says, Al Shileshim Vel Ribein, if you remember that pasuk. We read it not yesterday, but the day before yesterday in the Kriya for a Tainis Tzibur. Mm-hmm. And that means that God will wait 3 and 4 generations sometimes. But with regard to mitzvos and zchuyos and merits, it says even more generations. And the Gemara again applies this Kal Vachomer. How many people in this room may have learned the Masechta Makos at some point? No? Daf Yomi. So in Masechta Makos, we also have the same kind of approach of a Kal Vachomer li osei ritzono. Because in the parsha of testimony of Eidus, the Torah says, Al pishnayim o shlosha edim yokum dover. And the Gemara in Makos wants to know, 2 or 3 witnesses. Why does the Torah have to say 3 witnesses if it already says 2 witnesses? And the Torah and the Gemara clarifies what the Torah had in mind. Let's say, for example, you know that Reuven and Shimon are going to testify. What decision, what motivation do you have to testify as the third witness in this unit, because the Torah relies on 2 witnesses? Mm-hmm. But you have to realize that if you go ahead and decide, for whatever reason, that you want to join the unit as the third member, the Torah says you now have the same status as the other 2 members. What does that mean? It means that if there's a process of hazama by which we prove that these witnesses perjure themselves, then all 3 witnesses will be punished. And the third witness, Lechora, is claiming, he's yelling and screaming, why do I have to be punished? The law and the decision would have been handed down based on the testimony of 2 witnesses. And that third witness is called a nitfal li ovrei avera. I'll write this on the board in case
anyone wants to see. And it means again, nitfal means the...
Nitfal. Li ovrei avera. Now, nitfal comes from the word tofel.
Oh,
a tofel means secondary.
Oh.
The third witness, after the first two witnesses already gave their testimony, they already testified, he is a nitfal. Nitfal means he is just simply supporting. He gives them, shall we call it, psychological support. You know, when two witnesses come in, if they have a third witness, they feel a lot more secure. And that's called a nitfal li ovrei avera. Now, why is he called a nitfal? He's supporting ovrei avera because we had Adam Zomamim that came in, and they established that these first two witnesses were guilty of perjuring themselves in their testimony, and these first two witnesses are going to be punished with a very severe punishment. In some cases, it's even a capital punishment. And now the third witness says, Lozmer up it, leave me alone, I'm out of here. Well, why are you going to punish me? I mean, okay, so I perjured myself. But so what? You had these two witnesses anyway, and you would have relied on them even without me. I'm secondary, I'm out of the picture. And the Gemara says, no, I'll push Naim Oshlosha Edom. Even the third witness is going to be held responsible, and he's going to suffer the same punishment through Azoma as the first two witnesses. And the Gemara then sets up a Kal Vachomer. Madoch, if the Torah, in the case of a nitfal li ovrei avera, he's tofel, he's going to be punished, how much more so a nitfal li osei mitzvah? Like, let's say, for example, there are two people going collecting for Matanas Levyonim on Purim, and you become the third. They would have gone by themselves, those two. But they wanted to get that extra support for that mitzvah, any sort of mitzvah. Let's say, Hachnosis Orchim, when we take in guests, or Bikur Cholim, when we visit the sick, or Nichum Avelim, that third party might not be necessary in a certain sense. It could be the second party. He is only Tofel, he's secondary, but nevertheless, how much more so is he going to get Schar? Because God is more compassionate when it comes to Schar, meeting out reward, than he is when it comes to punishing the evildoers. We see it here in the case of Sota. We saw it in other cases that the Torah is very, very magnanimous when it comes to schar, when it comes to onesh. As we said, it's only two or three generations, maybe four generations. With regard to schar, it could be 1,000 generations. It could be that we today, sitting here, thanking God and appreciating what He gave us, that we have the schus to live in Yerushalayim. That could be because of the merits of not only our great-great-grandfathers, but it could be generations way back in our ancestry, because God takes merits and He bridges all of time. And that's because He's more compassionate when it comes to giving out rewards. The Gemara says the following. I don't understand Rabbi Eliezer. I'm not really clear about his statement. How does Rabbi Eliezer know that the reason why we are weakening and exhausting the sota so that she'll admit and confess is in order to prevent her from dying as a result of the shtira? Maybe it's for a different reason. Dilma, perhaps. Ki heichi delo timachek
megillah. Sorry, I'm lost. Where are we?
We're on the last line of Yudalit Amnal, the very last line on 14. A. Mm-hmm. You see the word Dilma in that line? Dilma ki hechi delo timochek megillah. Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to evince an admission, a confession from her, in order to save him, with a capital H, the loss of the destruction of his holy name. So it's only because of Kavod Hashem, not because he's compassionate on an evildoer. Kosovar, the Gemara says that Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion, and here we turn to 14b, is everyone on the same page? Mm-hmm. You valid on the days? That Mashke the Acharkach Makriv Es Minchasa, that first she drinks from the Meimararim, and only afterwards they bring her Karba Mincha. And if that be the case, again, we can go through the two opinions on that issue as far as the sequence is concerned. But the E Mishum Megillah, if the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to make sure that she, or tries to encourage her to give the admission, is to avoid the blotting out of his name on the Megillah, then Ha'imchika La, right? Because according to the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, the mashke, the process of drinking, which is the moment in which the name of Hashem is obliterated, that took place already before she was Makar of the Mincha. Now, we're tiring her out, if you remember our Mishnah at the beginning of the second parak, with the Mincha, right? We ask her to lift up the Mincha, correct? Mm-hmm. And that's meant to exhaust her and to evoke some sort of a confession. But wait a second, it's really too late to prevent the Mechikas Hashem. The Mechikas Hashem takes place, according to Rabbi Eliezer, even before we get to the Karban Mincha. The Karban Mincha is only after she drinks from the Mei Meroren. So we've already obliterated or blotted out the name of God on this Megillah, even before we get to the stage of weakening her, exhausting her, by carrying the Mincha up and down.
If that's so, it doesn't make sense.
And therefore, it doesn't make any sense unless you assume that there's a whole other reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to exhaust her with this mincha. She's already drunk the mayim. Mm-hmm. If she confesses her sin, then God is going to prevent, so to speak, the supernatural power of these mayim aron from having their impact, and God's going to spare her life. Do you follow what's going on over here? God is going to spare her life. And why? Because God has compassion even on an evildoer. So again, as far as the Mechikas Hashem is concerned, that's already a done deal. In Yiddish we say farfallen. It's already gone. It's done. It's already finito. So you're not going to be able to spare the Mechikas Hashem and defend the glory of God. That's already too late, according to Rabbi Eliezer. So why are we trying to exhaust her at the time that's subsequent to the Hashka? And the answer is that God is going to step into the equation here, and he's going to create a it's a funny kind of thing. I don't even know it's supernatural. I think at this point we're going to make it natural again, if you follow what I mean. No, it's naturally mm-hmm. she wouldn't have this experience, but God has the supernatural miracle where she'll die, and now God is going to sort of turn it back to the natural order of events, in order to spare her, if only she will confess her crime. But you see an amazing thing from this Gemara, that the Gemara holds that her confession would be meaningful even after the Mechikas Hashem, and even after she drank from the Mei Meroren. She could still salvage herself and save her life through a Hodah.
But once she drinks the Mei Meroren, either she's dead,
no, it takes a while. Did you get to the Gemara yet? How long it takes until it actually impacts on her?
It was a process.
Yeah, I don't know what you covered. And the Gemara is going to say that in certain cases it could take even 3 years if she dies. That's if she has what's called the schus of Talmud Torah. I think we discussed this one.
We did.
If not with me, then with the good rabbi. Yeah, I'm sure you discussed
it. It's not instantaneous, right? Where she just blows up.
No.
That's what we used to say. Yeah.
No.
So why did you get that impression?
It's a process.
Oh, it's a process.
All right, let's go back to our Mishnah now.
Mishnah.
Okay, so again, don't lose the place. Oh. Just hold on to the place. I just want to take a moment's time to go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah, on the third line, says the following: Kol aminochos tchilosan v'sofan b'klisharis v'zo tchilosa b'kfifa mitzris v'sofa b'klisharis. So now we have two mesechtas in Shas that are dedicated to a korban mincha. One is called Mesechta Menochos, and that's dedicated to the general rule that applies to all menochos. But there's one exceptional mincha, and there's a Masechta that's dedicated, or at least part of the Masechta, to that Mincha, and that's Masechta Sota. Because the Mincha Sota has its own rules and regulations. And this Mishnah, as you've already learned, sets aside a contrast between this Mincha of Sota and all universal halachos of Menachos in general. So one of the various differences is the following: at what point do you need a kli sharis. So there are two critical moments in the bringing of a mincha. And the first stage of the mincha is perhaps less important than the second stage of the mincha. So the first stage in the korban is called, in the language of the Mishnah, tchilasa. Do you see that word, tchilasa?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The beginning.
Right. So tchilasa is when the mincha is first being prepared. That's the preparation of the mincha, and that's going to lead up to what's called sofa, and sofa is the point in which we have the avoda of the lavona. Okay, so every mincha requires a lavona. Lavona is a certain kind of a spice. And the two parts of this process, which are called tchilasa and sofa, in the case of universal mincha, require a kli sharis. And the Gemara is going to derive that from psukim in Masechta Menachas. However, there's an exception to the rule in the case of the mincha sota, and tchilasa is not in a kli sharis, but only something called a kfifa mitzvus. Now, to understand a little bit about how they made this kfifa mitzvus, we're going to talk about a palm tree. You know, there are many types of trees that grow, and not all of them, but most of them have a layer of wool, believe it or not. It's like a woolly kind of substance, which is below the bark and before the wood. So if you remove the bark of the tree, and before you get to the wood of the tree, there's this middle layer, which is called a tsemer. It looks like wool. So if I don't know if anyone here is learning Masechta Shabbos.
It's a fiber. Mm-hmm. It's like a fiber.
Well, it's a little confusing because the word fiber is more appropriate for flax. So not to confuse us, because we're going to use the word flax. We use the word fiber when we get to flax. Here we're using the word a woolly kind of a substance.
Brown or white.
Okay, it's brown called a phelim in fancy. P-H-E-L... I forgot exactly.
Is it brown or white?
Yeah, and it has a whitish kind of color. They used to somehow melt it down and they made wicks out of it.
God.
And the fancy word for that in English is called a bast. B-A-S-T. So if anybody has a Google here, you can Google the word bast, and you'll learn about these fibrous, woolly kind of cottonous kind of substance that's below the surface of the bark of the tree. And they used to take a palm tree, which is called a mitzris. You know, these were very common trees in the Middle East. And there was a kind of a woolly substance, and they would use that after processing it and make it into a basket of some sort. And then they would put the beginning stages of the mincha in that basket. And our Gemara is going to try to see if we can establish this. But what I would suggest, how many of you have an art scroll in front of you? Yeah, a lot of people have an art scroll. If you happen to have an art scroll, so you'll take a look at a footnote number 3, which is on the bottom left of the Mishnah itself. Again, you're back on the Mishnah, correct? Mm-hmm. He says, after the husband placed the mincha on his wife's hands, she would be made to hold it throughout the lengthy procedure, and that would tire her out. Okay, fine, that's one part. Then we want to fast forward to note number 4. Beginning, what's tchilasa? The mincha is first brought into the chatzer, right? The Beis HaMikdash had different parts to it, one of which was called the chatzer HaMikdash. Now, when they first brought the mincha, and again, in the case of old minchas, they already have put it into what's called a kli sharis, and Belinetta will talk about a kli sharis. And then the end period, which is called sofa in our Mishnah, that's the point when the kohen scoops out a kometz. And that kometz has a relationship to the lavona that I spoke to you about before. Now, a kometz is the area between the pinky, the small finger, and the... what's it called, the palm of a hand, and the Kohen meant to learn, it wasn't an easy task, they would grab from the mincha a certain amount of solas. Solas means the fine flour, and that would be grabbed by the Kohen in that area of his hand, and then that would be burnt on the mizbeach. So that took place, the sofa. That's called a komitz, the avodas ha-komitz, a kmitza, otherwise known as kmitza. So the Gemara is now going to understand that when they brought the mincha, whoever is chayav in the korban mincha, did you ever discuss something called a korban olah v'yored? Have you ever discussed that?
Not here.
Let me just, again, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but let's say, for example, a person took an oath, and then he violates his oath, or he took a false oath. So he has to bring a korban asham, which is called a korban olah v'yored. And a korban olah v'yored means it depends upon his financial status, as we said before. Rachmana chasal mamonim shel Yisrael. So if he's a wealthy guy, he has to bring a se'ira or a kizba. That's a very expensive goat or a sheep. If he's not that wealthy, then we let him get away with what's called shtei torim or shnei b'nei yonah, which are birds that are a lot less expensive. And if he can't afford that, we'll let him get away with asiris ha'efa, with the cheapest kind of mincha, korban mincha. That's, korban mincha is always indicative of financially the less expensive kind of korban. So in a case of a korban mincha, both the original tchila, when they brought the korban in a kli sharis b'tchilasa into the chatzer, it had to be in a kli sharis. In the case of sota, when the korban mincha was brought into the chatzer, it was brought in a what's called a kfifa mitzvahs, correct? What's the language again? A kfifa mitzvahs. Now we get to the final moment of the bringing of the mincha, which is called the moment of kmitza. And there we're going to require, even in the case of sota, mincha sota, that the kmitza be done in a kli sharis. So we're going to basically pour out the mincha from a kfifa mitzvahs into a kli sharis, and that's going to be in the case of mincha sota. So obviously we see that the main avoda in mincha is the avodas hakmitza, and for this we have to learn footnote number 4, I'm sorry, number 6, and footnote number 7. Now, an ordinary mincha, I call it universal mincha, the Torah writes at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, he has to pour the oil on the mincha, and then he has to place lavona on top of the mincha. Again, all of this requires a great deal of study. You could probably spend a half a year studying what we just read in one sentence in Masechta Menachos. So it seems that they put everything, that let's say the mincha is made of grain, usually wheat, and they grind the wheat. I mean, the exception to that is the korban ha'omer, which is a korban mincha that's brought from barley. But otherwise, the menachos are brought from chita, which is wheat. And they would take this wheat and make it into fine flour, which is called soles. They would pour shemen, which is oil, and lavona, which is a kind of, he says it's called frankincense, if that helps anyone, take it. And all this would be poured into a kli sharis. However, in the case of sota, the Torah says he shall not pour on it oil. He should not put on it lavona. And that means that in the first stage, at least, we don't require a kli sharis. The requirement of a kli sharis is for the shemen ulavona, leading up to the ultimate bringing of the korban mincha. But now we're talking about a case of a mincha sota, where the Torah does away with the requirement of shemen and lavona, and therefore we don't have a kli sharis. But again, later on we're going to pour the contents of the kfifa mitzvahs into a kli sharis. And he tells you that on daf tesvav, which is way futuristic for us, the Gemara is going to ask, what about a minchas chote? There's another kind of a mincha that's brought by a chote, which also, chote, for certain sins you bring a korban mincha, especially if you can't afford a more expensive korban. And in the case of a minchas chote, guess what? There's no requirement of shemen and lavona, and yet we require kli sharis. So that's going to be a problem later on. Now in footnote number 7, He points out that with the exception of the Omer, which is brought on the second day of Pesach from barley, all menachos are brought from wheat. And the Torah tells us at the end of Sefer Shmos that it's got to be soles mincha, and that soles is made of wheat flour. In the case of mincha sota, like the case of the Omer, the makeup of the korban is going to be, of the mincha is going to be barley. It's going to be barley. Anybody know what barley is classified, how it's classified or described in Shas?
For the animals.
As opposed to feet, exactly. It's animal fodder. It's food for the animal. And the Gemara is going to try to tell us that she acted in a way that's sort of unbecoming of a human being in the context of marriage, and therefore the korban is going to be a korban. What's called seorin is called what again in English? Barley, correct? Barley is meichel behem. The question is why the omer is brought from barley, and that has to do with the fact that the omer was brought before Matan Torah, right? 7 weeks before Matan Torah. Mm-hmm. So the people of Israel were just a member of the entire animal kingdom. They didn't reach the level of chita. That's going to take 7 weeks as they build up slowly and gradually till Matan Torah. So the Gemara says, "Ver minhu." So we're now back to Daf Yudalid on the Beis, and we're on line 3, right after the two dots. Uraminu always introduces a contradiction, and in 99 out of 100 cases it's a contradiction between a contradiction that's raised from a braisa, either against the statement in the Gemara or against the Mishnah. In this case we're going to find what seems like an irreconcilable contradiction between a braisa and our Mishnah. Now this braisa is addressing universal menachos, not minchas sota, but we've already established that in the case of universal menachos, we begin the process in the chatzer in a klisharis. Well, is that really so? Let's take a look at this braisa. Now, this braisa is called Seder Menachos. For those of you who recite Karbonos on a daily basis, most of us don't or they, you know, we select it. There's going to be a braisa about Seder Zvachim, and that braisa does not touch on the Seder of Menachos. And you know, the Mefarshim want to know, why is it that on a daily basis we're going to recite the Seder Zvachim and not the Seder Menachos? Anybody had a sitter here by any chance? Maybe this is a Sidur. Let's see. Like, for example, in Karbonos, we have a whole section here called Seder Marocha, Alibada B'Shol. And it goes through Marocha Rishona, and the Marocha Shnia, and then we have the Ketores, and then what's called the Gizrei Eitzim, and then we have the Dishim Mizbeach HaPnimi, and then the Dishim Mizbeach HaChitzoni, Yavatovas HaNeros, Yavatlokas HaNeros, and then you bring, at the end of this whole process, you bring different kinds of korbanos. So that's recited in this section on a daily basis. So for example, there were two korbanos that were brought daily. What were they called? Anybody know? Tamid, right? There's a Tamid Shal Shabbat and a Tamid Shal Ben Arbayim. And this entire Seder that we go through on a daily basis in the morning is to give us a little bit of a what's called the Shalom of Parm Svaseinu, that we could speak about the mitzvah of Tamid, Tamid Shal Shachar, Tamid Shal Ben Arbayim. The Sfaradim will recite the parasha of the Tamid twice, not just in Shachar, like the Ashkenazim get away cheap. They'll do it again in Mincha time. So if they tell you, when you're rushing, and they tell you, well, come to our shul for Mincha, Mincha will take place at 4 p.m., you always have to add about 15 minutes. I'm exaggerating, but, you know, until they say Karbonos. But the Seder of Mincha is not recited on a daily basis. And that's what we're going to learn now in this braisa here, the Seder of the Mincha. Because the Mincha, unlike the Tamid, was a, what word should I use, was a specific time-bound chiyuv. In other words, there were certain very very specific moments that would generate a chiyuv of a carbon mincha. Obviously, a carbon sota is a carbon mincha, but it's not brought on a daily basis, on a regular basis, as opposed to the carbon tamid. So anything that we recite in the karbonos on a daily basis, and I'm not talking about Shabbos and Yom Tov now, those are related to the carbon tamid. So for example, if you are in a rush and you don't have time to read karbonos on a daily basis, at least you should read two things. That's Torah Shvatzav, Torah Shvatzav. At least read the parsha of carbon tamid and the Mishnah of Ola, which you'll see towards the end of the karbonos, because the carbon tamid was called the carbon Ola. So that covers you as far as Torah Shvatzav and Torah Shvatzav for the carbon Ola is concerned. The other parts are embellishments of the carbon tamid, different things like the Seder Maracha and other parts of the carbon. So on Shabbos and Yom Kippur, it takes on a whole different perspective, because there we want Nishalom Parmas Vaseinu to read the parshios of the Karbanos of Shabbos or the Karbanos of Yontif, and that's what we're going to add to Karbanos. But Mincha simply is omitted. So let's learn about Seder Mincha, because if we don't say it on a daily basis, at least we can learn it here. Seder Minachos Ketzad. So what's the sequence? Adam, number one, Mevi Mincha Mitoch Beso. Now this brisa reflects the idea that if you're chayav on an individual level a korban mincha, then you have to bring it from your own chita. Again, we said that every korban mincha that's private is brought from chita. Please. Again, with the exception of the mincha sota, which is brought from siora. There's a korban mincha shel tzibur that's brought from siora, but that's the korban omer. So he's got to bring it mitoch beso. Now, how does he bring it mitoch beso? So they had what's called a gemach. Do you know what a gemach is, Rav Osai? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a kind of a public lending, borrowing and lending, like the libraries, you know, the public libraries. Mm-hmm. So they had certain kelim, which were clay hamigdash, and they would have to be offered for the use of bringing a korban mincha. And in the language of this brisa, these are called klosos shel kesef v'shel zov. Now the word klosos, the singular is klosa, which I know from Masechta Gittin, because the Gemara is going to talk about Masechta Gittin, a woman who's married and she's holding on to a klosa. Klosa is a basket. Mm. And the Baal, the husband, wants to divorce her. He has a get written up. And he puts the get into her klosa. Instead of putting it into her hand, which is called Vinasan Biyada, the pasuk in Kitetze. Mm-hmm. And the Gemara derives from an extra pasuk that he can put it not only in her hand, but he can put it in her basket. In any event, here the klosos we use to bring the karba mincha, or at least the raw materials of the karba mincha, to the Beis HaMikdash. And these were made of kesef and zav. Again, this is all during the period of Bayis Rishon. We'll have to see about Bayis Sheni, is a whole other story. V'nosno l'toch kli shares. So the first part of the process is in a basket. This basket does not have the status of a kli shares. And only afterwards, at stage two, do we pour the contents of the baskets into a kli shares. Now, what's the function of the kli shares? How is the kli shares, by far, by leaps and bounds, superior, so to speak, in the ambiance of kudshin to the klosos, to these baskets? And that's what the brisa points out: umekadsha b'kli shares. Anything that goes into a kli shares, as long as it belongs in a kli shares, is sanctified by the kli shares. The kli shares, you know, we have, this is what's called zelu maaseh. Just like in Tumah Vitara, if you have a kli that's tame and you pour something into the kli, then the kli itself conveys tumah to that which is inside the kli. Then lahavdil, elef avdolos, on the opposite end of the spectrum, when we get to kedusha, Then when you have a Kli Sharish which is sanctified with Kedushas HaGuf, Kedushas HaGuf is another way of saying the most intense level of Kedusha. The low level is called Kedushas Damin, if you're familiar with that, but in any event, not for us now. So the sanctity of the Kli Sharish is that of Kedushas HaGuf. And if it's a receptacle and you pour into that receptacle that which is meant to be, is designated to be put into that receptacle, then the contents now become sanctified. Which means that there's going to be an iser now with regard to eating this food or drinking this drink if you're tame, and you're going to have to eat it and drink it in the mikdash and not outside the mikdash, perhaps in the azara. And then we get to the third stage. Vinosei Noleo Shamna Ulevonosa. Now wait a second. This is the epitome or the apex of the Avodas HaMincha, when we pour in the oil in the Levona. And where is this going on? So the Gemara assumes that when it says that Nosno Letokli Shore Sumakacha, this is happening in the Chatzer. You remember that we said that the Tchilosa of Av Mishnah is referring to the Chatzer. And yet, it seems that already by the time we're in the Chatzer, we're pouring the contents of the Mincha into a Kli Sharis. So that would support the position of universal Menachos. And by contrast, in the case of a Karvan Mincha Sota, where the din is betchilasa, when we first start with the preparation of the Karvan Mincha Sota, we start with the Klosos HaMitzris, correct? And now we're already up to the third stage of Shamna Ulevonasa. What happens now? Umalicha. And we take this entire Kli Sharis which has in it Soles, Shemen, and Levona, and Molicha, and we carry it, right, the hay of Molichas with a mapike, it's referring to it, but in the feminine, that means the Mincha, which is in feminine, Eitzel Kohen, Umagisha Bekeren Dromis. And now the Kohen has to present this Mincha. And again, the word mincha is feminine, and therefore magisho with a mapik hey. The keren dromis marovis. Now let's just take a moment of time to talk about the top of the mizbeach. The mizbeach was more or less a square, not exactly. It had a yesod. Not the yisod on the bottom, but the middle thing, what's it called? The sovev, right? They had a sovev and a yisod. They would jut out, but otherwise it was pretty much square. And on top of the mizbeach, there were four chronos. There were four structures that were, let's say, two amos high on each one of the four chronos. And you have in this case, we're talking about the keren dromis mizrachis. Am I correct? Let me just make sure I'm not misleading you. Oh, Keren Dromis Maravis. I said Mizrachis, I made a mistake. So you're on the south, you're on the southwestern side of the altar on top. And that's where we're going to do the process of the Mincha. Now, the Gemara later on is going to derive this from Pesukim. Now, it says the following. Where on the corner, which is called the southwestern corner, where are we going to do this avoda? Keneged chudo shel keren. Okay, the keren was made in a square, like of two amos high. But on the top of the keren, there was something called chudo shel keren. And it was one part of the keren jutted above. And the Brisa says vidayo. Vidayo means that's enough. Again, we're going to have to go through the Gemara what that means vidayo, because we're talking about a different stream. What's perfect in the ideal situation, that's called lechatchila, and then there's something called bidyevet, which is called vidayo. Okay, now what happens? Misalek es alavono litzad echad, right? He moves the lavona to one side within the klisharis, and then Kometz mi makom shenisrabo shamno. So remember that we poured oil into this mixture, which has in it solace, and now we're up to kmitza, right? Kmitza is the avoda, the main avoda of a mincha, like just like we have zrikas adam in the case of zvachin, we have kometz kmitza in the case of minochos. And the question is, from what side of the klishares should the kohen dip his finger to do the kmitza? And the answer is, he has to figure out where is most of the oil. Now, when we say more most of the oil, you remember he poured the oil onto the solus, and the oil does not diffuse, if there's such a word, in a uniform way. Part of the oil, mixes with the solus on one side of the klisharis, and there's a little bit less oil on the other side. Nosna l'sol klisharis umekadshe b'klisharis. Right, he digs his finger in to take the kometz out, and after he takes the kometz out, he puts it into a second klisharis. So just keep in mind, Rabbos, that we now have three different kelim. Right, we brought the mincha, meaning the flour, in a klasa, which is made of either gold or silver. Mm-hmm. Then we poured that, the contents of that, into a klisharis, and what we're going to do is we're going to add the shemen and the lavona into that klisharis, which is klisharis number one. It's the second keli, but it's only the first klisharis. And then after the kmitza, we're going to take that kometz and we're going to put it into, from the second keli, which is the first klisharis, into a second klisharis. And all this is going to be derived from psukim in the Gemara. Umalaket es livonasa. Then he gathers together in the second klisharis, which is the third keli, the lavona. Now, the lavona apparently does not get absorbed by the solus. It remains separate from the solus. So you have the flour, which is now absorbed with oil, and then you have the lavona. Now, he takes this lavona, the nosna al-gabi mizbeach, and he places it on the mizbeach. Umaleu umaktiro, the klisharis. So he brings it up to the top of the mizbeach. It's going to be burnt on the mizbeach, and all this is going to be poured onto the mizbeach from the klisharis. Umolcho, the nosno al gabi ha'ishin. Every karbon requires an admixture of melach. And the verb, the noun is melach, and the verb is molcho. So he's got to do malicha. Malicha means he's got to add salt, then no snow agave ishim, and then it's ready for the fire. So again, the haktara, which is on the fire, will only take place after the malicha. Karev hakometz shi'arim necholim. Once he took that kometz in the second clue and poured it on the mizbeach, at the moment that the kometz goes up in smoke, then the rest of the komet, the rest of the mincha, which was again collected in the first of the two klisharises, is necholim. Who's going to eat the mincha? Not the bailin, not the owner of the karbon. It's going to be eaten by the kohanim. Now the kohanim, you know, don't like the taste of the mincha. You know, it's basically oil and wheat. So what do? Rashaim kohanim liteg l'sochan yayin shemen udvash. They're allowed to mix up the shiari ha-mincha with all sorts of different mixtures that will make it more palatable. V'ein asurim el milachamitz. The only iser, which is a lavdo raisa, they have to be careful not to bring this mincha, which is flour, to the point of chametz. And that's based on a pasuk in the Torah that says, lo se'ofe chametz. So be careful not to add water into this mixture. And this sugya is going to be very relevant to the Gemara Psachim, because the Gemara Psachim is going to try to figure out if you can create chametz by mixing flour with fruit juices. Have you ever seen something called grape matzahs?
Yeah.
It's So that's a big sugya, where the grape matzahs really are matzah, because I don't know if you can create chametz with grape juice. But grape matzahs are also made with water, and then you go into machlokes rishonim, where you have fruit juices together with water, and that mixture do you get to chametz. Because matzah has to be the flip side of chametz.
Assuring.
Anyway, now we get to the Gemara's kasha. I mean, finally, we can swing back to the stira between this price and our Mishnah. Ketani bios, it says, in any event, b'klosol shel kesef u'klos shel zav, that the minch is brought from the first of the three kalim in a basket. That basket is not kadosh b'kedushas klishares. It's brought from the house. I mean, obviously, it doesn't have the status of klishares. Mm-hmm. So it's only later, when the mincha gets to the second stage, and that's going to happen in the chatzer, only at that point do we bring the mincha and pour it into what? Into a kli sharis. How can the Mishnah tell me that chilasa of a kli sharis v'sof of a kli sharis? That's not true. You don't begin in a kli sharis. Amar Papa, Eimer b'kelim haru'uyim l'kli sharis. A whole new interpretation of our Mishnah, says Rav Papa. That we're talking about a kli which could become a kli sharis. What does that mean? It means it has the size of a kli sharis. It's made up of the right materials for a kli sharis. It means that it is tar and it's not tame. Michlal. Oh, now we go back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah sets up a contrast between universal menachos and the minchas sota. Michlal the kfifa mitzris lo chazia. This case of the basket that's made of the bast that we spoke about before is not fit to become a kli sharis. Kiman de lo krav yosi, brav Yehuda. The sanyu ever brisa kli sharis hason shal eitz. Rebbe posel, brav yosi, brav Yehuda machshir. So you have now a klisharis that was made out of wood, and Rebbe says it's possible as a klisharis. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda allows it to be a klisharis. Now what that means is that according to Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, this basket that we said was made of bast, and bast is a product of what? Of a tree. So it has the halacha of eitz. And yet, according to Rabbi Yossi, this basket that's made of wood is roi, what we call in the Gemara's language, chazia, it's fit to be a kli sharis. So the Gemara now is going to try to reconcile this brisa of kfifa, this mission of kfifa mitzris with the shita of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. Again, let's just try to I want to let you go, but just to reiterate the stira here between our Mishnah and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. We're holding now that in a case of a kli that's brought at the first stage of the mincha, the kli has to be roi l'kli sharis. And now we have a kasha. What do you mean, roi l'kli sharis? We're talking about, in our Mishnah, mincha sota, a mincha that was brought in a kfifa mitzritz, which is made of wood. And that's not roi leos kli sharis. Just one second. Wait, one second. The loker of Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, why is this the sanya kli sharis? Not sure exactly how the Gemara calculates this. The loker of Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. Oh, I got it. The Gemara is saying the following. I was thinking in terms of universal menachos, but now the Gemara is analyzing minchas sota. We said that minchas sota doesn't require a kli sharis in the first stage, correct? It's only later when they add the levona, that's when it requires a kli sharis. So that's against Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi holds that this basket that's made of palm bast is roi leos kli sharis, which means that they were makpid to use in the initial stage of a minchas sota a kli which could become a kli sharis. That doesn't make any sense, because the Mishnah says that this gufa is the contrast between a minchas sota and all other minochas. That whereas in all other minochas we start with a kli that is right to become a kli shares, and that would be the case of klosel shel kesef izov, but in the case of a minchas sota we don't require kli shares b'tchi loso. So why is the Mishnah being mocked in that we have to take this kli shares that's made from this kind of bast of a palm tree, which according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, is kosher as a kli shares? So this is where we're going to stop for today. And I'll wish everyone a great Shabbos. And I mean, again, you know, you're getting into some heavy sugyas here of kodshim. You know.